Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber, Penn State football beat reporter for the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. Audrey, we are probably going to want to get into this here pretty quickly before we dive too deep into this probably arduous discussion that I'm sure a lot of Penn State fans are waiting for. Do not forget to rate, review, and subscribe on YouTube, on Spotify, on Apple. This was bad.
Yeah, we are coming to you. This is Saturday night. We're recording this. I'm just going to get this out of the way right now because I think Penn State fans need this right now. That sound you hear is me cracking a beer. I think you all probably need a few of those after this one. Yeah.
Frankly, I'm drinking Aquafina because I dehydrate myself every game day. It's really bad. I know, but there is water on deck over here.
Penn State, John, this was a mess. Ohio State gets the win 20-12. Yes, I was wrong. I was fooled into thinking that this year would be different. I believed that this Penn State offense was not only going to be capable of putting up points, but also competent. And that's not what we saw. I mean, this was heading into the stadium Saturday morning. There were so many different ways I thought this would go. We had touched last week. You said you thought it would be a low-scoring game. I did not expect that Penn State would have this many questions coming out of this game. And quite frankly, every single question I have is about the Nittany Lion offense.
Yeah, I want to get something out of the way here pretty quickly because I don't want people to think we glossed over it. I think Penn State has the best defense in the country. They're awesome. They're incredible. They played an incredible game. We are not going to talk much about this defense. This is entirely, like you said, about the offense and about how, and I tweeted it out near the end of the game, all they needed was an average performance to win. And instead, they put on an abysmal one. This was as bad as it gets. And from the top down, this was bad, right? Like Mike Yurcich was bad. Drew Aller was bad. The offensive line had its fair share of struggles too. The wide receivers were bad. Honestly, though, I know I listed them in what may have seemed like a random order, but to me, this is on Yurcich. Like this is 90% of the blame here goes to Mike Yurcich. It was an absolute mess from the start. I am not I'm not an NFL scout. I'm not a general manager, but if I can't figure out what your game plan is early in the game or what the intention of your offense is, what you're trying to accomplish, it's not a good sign, right? Like it should be clear what you're going to try to do to win the game. And at no point was it clear what Penn State was, basically what the objective was offensively.
Yeah. And you know what, John, you just said that, and I'm just thinking in my head right now, right? James Franklin said on Tuesday, this offense was not going to be something that it hasn't been all season, right? They knew what their identity was. This was a mess. I mean, this was an all around complete dud from the Penn State offense. And the thing that I still am just befuddled by, I mean, Penn State was one of 16 on third down conversions. And that one conversion did not come late into the game. There was a penalty there. But I believe this is while I was making my way down to the field. That was the conversion late. I mean, this was Drew Aller after the game was asked, you know, how did he think he performed? And he, fighting back tears, said, sucked. Like I sucked. This was not great. Kudos to Drew for coming out, talking with us. I mean, he is 19 years old and this is one of the times where it would have been nice to get answers from the adults, right? Like I always default to that.
Yeah. I don't think just nice either. Like it would have been responsible for the adults to be answering for this because Drew is technically an adult. He's 19 years old. The fact that he had to be the front person for this. Now, James took questions as he always does. Like James is the first person we talk to. He is the front man of it all. To his credit, he always speaks
for about 10 minutes. Now the thing that kind of got me with this was James Franklin did not want to talk big picture. He wanted to talk about this one game. Well, you know what? You're 1-9 against Ohio State. So yes, we've got a lot of questions because then it comes to, right after UMass, you don't want to talk about it. This week, he was asked a bigger picture question about Ohio State, and he said, well, you know, the game's not any bigger. It's just because it's the opponent this week. There are massive questions, concerns. You look at the record, 3-16 against teams in the AP top 10. This was not a great performance. And on top of that, John, this game was there for the taking. Like, Ohio State left the door open. If you had an offense that could just even slightly move the ball, Penn State wins this game. And I think that's the thing that has to be so maddening and so frustrating for fans is, yes, like this Ohio State team, I'm very curious what happens with the AP poll on Sunday. Because based off of what we saw today, I mean, both of these teams have some warts, have some serious flaws. But yeah, like this was a team in Ohio State that you had every opportunity to take this game over. The defense did everything it possibly could. I mean, Marvin Harrison was going to get his, and he did. He was targeted 16 times, 11 catches, 162 yards. He had a long of 35, and he had one touchdown. Massive numbers, right? Those are
This is going to sound like hyperbolic. Reasonably, he could have gotten 25 targets. He was consistently open. Kyle McCord did not do a great job of finding him. Yeah, he found him, would you say it was 11 times? Legitimately could have been like a 17 catch game for Marvin Harrison. I could have, you know, counted on both hands like the number of times that I saw him wide open. And it wasn't like, oh, we have a weird perspective. We are above the field. It's essentially the all 22 view. And right. You can see what is opening up. And I vividly remember early in the game, there was a clear out route. I think it was Ohio State's first drive. They basically cleared out the left side of the field of the formation. And McCord ends up throwing up a contested catch to Julian Fleming, who doesn't come down with it. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Fleming. And Harrison is running a drag underneath, and he's wide open. He walks into the end zone if he throws him the ball, and he didn't, right? And Penn State kind of got bailed out from that standpoint. That's not Penn State's fault. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best college football player in the country. Like, that's – he should win the Heisman, right? Like, I know Caleb Williams will get buzz. Michael Penix, too, rightfully so.
Yeah.
But, like, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best football player in college football right now. But no, you're right. This game was there for the taking, and not just there for the taking. They should have won. They blew it, quite frankly. This was not like, you know, one bounce goes their way. They're a little unlucky. They blew this game. They absolutely should have won it. And, you know, I think people are going to have to answer questions about this, right? Because this is, I said it last year after the Michigan game, and they went on to go 10-2, win 11 games because of the Rose Bowl win. Is this just who Penn State is now? Like, is this just a team that consistently wins 10 games, and next year that's a playoff team? But, like, is this just a 10-win team from here to the end of the time, always going to be great but not elite?
I think so, John. I mean, and I say this because I felt like it was now or never, right? Because we're always going to have the caveat next year of, well, it's an expanded playoff field, right? So there's always going to be that, and fans are going to say, well, yeah, that's great. You got the 12-team field. Maybe you host a playoff game, but you never got in when it was just the 4-team field. And it speaks to where this program is. I mean, I think so much of this, it's the year-round race. We hear, oh, they're making all these other great strides. Well, you know what? Today was the day when it matters most to get it done on the field. And if you take care of business on the field, all of these other things then fall into place a little bit easier. And Penn State just could not get that done. And you're right. I mean, Kyle McCord was not particularly sharp. I got the numbers in front of me. Completions on 22 of 35 passes, 286 yards, one touchdown. He was sacked twice. But you flip over to the other side of this, John, Drew Aller, 18 of 42, 191 yards, one touchdown, which of course came within the last 30 seconds of the game to Caden Saunders, sacked four times. Neither quarterback turned the ball over, but it really didn't matter. I mean, I felt like, and this is what was so bizarre about this, for so much of this game, I felt like Penn State could have been trailing by 3 or by 33, and it wouldn't have made a difference because they just couldn't move the ball. I mean, I was absolutely just stunned by how inefficient the offense was. And, you know, I could understand it the first few drives. You're trying to feel things out. It's a big road environment. That place was rocking. And I know fans hate the noon kickoffs, big noon, all of that. You had College Game Day set up in the end zone. Big Noon was also set up in the other corner of the end zone. Like, this atmosphere was tremendous. Like, we thought it would, like we've always come to expect here in Columbus. So I get that early on, you're trying to figure it out. But once Penn State started running the ball with authority with Nick Singleton, right, he rips off that 20-yard run. then rips off 1 for 16. Yes, the defense adjusted, but the rest of the way Singleton became an afterthought, and some of that was the play calling. And I just, again, I don't know, back to like our overall talk at the beginning, like, what were they trying to do? Because we knew this receiving core was not a strength. We knew that there were plenty of flaws.
I think it's fair to say it's just a weakness at this point. It's not that it's just not a strength. It's a major weakness of this team.
Yeah, and you had Harrison Wallace back. You were healthy, right? You were apparently healthy, although Vengo Wane got the start, played, from my understanding, the entire game. Maybe there was something that came up late while I was walking down to the field. JB Nelson was not listed on the availability report. So you were as healthy as possible. Like, you had everything lined up, and then you roll this dud out there.
Yeah, I think – so I actually thought after the first quarter, I was like, oh, wow, Mike Yurcich is doing really well with this, right? Like, this is kind of exactly the formula that they needed to win this game. They had, I think it was 7 carries for 50 yards at that point. By the way, the rest of the game, and I know sacks took away some of the yards, they had -1 rushing yards from quarters 2 through 4. Completely unacceptable. But I thought after the first quarter, you know, Aller was 3 of 9 at that point too. But honestly, those throws early on, I thought were on him. Like, he just missed some spots where he had guys open, and, you know, he didn't hit guys while they were on the move. He didn't, you know, he missed Keandre Lambert-Smith on what looked like a corner route on one, where Lambert-Smith looked a little frustrated afterward. And I thought Yurcich was calling a good game through the first quarter. I caught some shit for that on Twitter. People didn't seem to agree with me.
It did not age well, John, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like, and this is, like, games change, right? Like, you know, the evaluating aspect of this changes as the game planning and the play calling changes. And I thought quarters 2 through 4, he was an abject disaster. It felt like Drew was not comfortable back there when I thought the protection was – I know some people harped on it. I mean, I'll rewatch the game tonight and I'll get a better picture for this, but I did not think it was that bad. You know, I know Olu Fashanu got caught at the end of the game by JT Tuimoloau, you know, on that crucial fourth down. But, like, I mean, that happens. That guy's that good. But I think for the most part, the offensive line was good. And Aller was not comfortable because guys weren't getting open. They weren't creating separation. And Drew mentioned after the game that Yurcich made these calls for these deep shots, you know, and that there were opportunities and they just didn't execute on them. And maybe that's the case, right? Maybe we'll see that on the rewatch, that guys were open downfield. But part of the reason that maybe he's not taking those shots and maybe he's not comfortable doing it, it's because he didn't do it for 6 games. And so you're dealing with maybe not a confidence issue, but the smart thing is to check it down. I'm supposed to check it down, right? Like, that mentality. I'm not saying – Drew did not say that, to be clear. I'm saying that. But, like, it's possible that the – not the muscle memory, but, like, the reflexive, like, reaction is, oh, yeah, he's kind of open, but if I check it down here, they'll be happy with it because I'm not turning the ball over, right? Like, that's – you're kind of – neutering your offense in some sense and taking away that big playability because you're not trusting your guy to make that play when he needs to do it most. And then you roll into Columbus and you try and make that the first real time that you do it, and it's not going to work, right? Like, it's not going to happen. I don't put – a lot of people are going to blame Drew Aller, like I said, for this. I think that's incorrect. I think the blame should not be apportioned to him. Yes, he missed throws. I actually thought he missed more throws early than late. I thought late it looked like guys were not getting open as much. I've talked a lot about how good Yurcich is at play design. Today was not that. Today was very much not that.
I'm just, and again, this is first blush. You and I haven't a chance to go back and watch this yet. But live, I mean, there were a couple instances for sure where, again, because we're getting like the All-22 view from up in the press box, where I'm saying, yeah, Drew could have ran the ball there, or wow, that guy looks open. But more often than not, John, there was no place to go. And I think all off season, right, the thing we kept writing, talking about was the receiving core. And again, I was fooled. I would, like, this game, I was fooled many times because I thought Dante Cephas this offseason was going to be a massive difference maker for this offense. That has not held true.
Yeah, that one's massive on me. Whoops. Still believe in Cephas as a player, but it's not happening this year. I don't think
it's not there. I mean, and I know he came off the field at one point believe it was after the flea flicker, right along that sequence, and James Franklin laid into him pretty good. Not sure what all that was about. But you do not have playmakers in that receiving core. I think Keandre Lambert-Smith can be that guy and should be that guy, but we just didn't see enough of that Saturday. Harrison Wallace, I recall a 12-yard completion, quiet thereafter. Theo Johnson had probably the biggest play of the game, if I'm recalling correctly. And then the offense,
it was 34 yards or something like that.
Yeah, 34 yards.
35 maybe.
The offense just stalls out. It's another Alex Falcons field goal. And like, to Falcons' credit, like, hit them both, right? Like, this is something early on this season I was talking, writing a lot about. So were you, like, field goals, is this going to cost them? No, special teams did not cost them the game. The Penn State offense was a massive, massive problem. And I think too, John, like, you go through and you look at this and you say, well, there's one guy who swung this entire game, and it wasn't either quarterback. It was Marvin Harrison Jr., right? And, like, yes, he is that good that he can take a game over, and we saw him do it. Yes, Penn State's secondary is good, but, like, there's not that difference maker on the Penn State offense right now. And I thought we were going to see Nick Singleton be that guy. I thought we were going to see Keandre Lambert-Smith maybe be that guy, maybe the tight ends. Here's the thing that gets me, John, the thing that the third down numbers, like, that is just absolutely insane. The trick plays, right? We saw Keandre
Lambert. This is my biggest twice. Issue.
Is this your biggest issue? Because we haven't discussed this.
Yes, because it's maddening. It makes no sense. So the first one is actually not the first one. The first one was the flea flicker that you mentioned where it feels like that is some play design where it feels like you're overthinking it, right? That yep. should be a simple reverse, because if Keandre just hangs onto that ball instead of pitching it back to Drew Aller, he's running free down the opposite sideline for a touchdown, right? Like, it feels like you're adding layers and like you're adding four layers. And it's like a trick play does not need to be four layers deep. It's like two or three layers deep is perfectly fine. So like the fact that he pitched it back to Drew, and obviously no one's open on the sideline because it looks like a normal pass play, is bad. The second one was what looked like a pass from Keandre to, I think, I still am not certain who the intended target was. I think either Theo Johnson or Tyler Warren was like 12 yards down the field, mm-hmm. which does not feel like when you run those plays, you're usually running someone deep. It did not seem like that was the case there, but they did it. Like, I really like the theory of what they're doing there, right? Like, if you're taking it, you're trying to make a big play after you just got the ball back near the 50-yard line.
Yes, the special teams comes up huge. Yes. Momentum swing there, like massive momentum swing in this game. Because at that point, I thought, you know what? Ryan Day goes for it on fourth down. Penn State defense gets a hell of a stop. And in my head, I'm saying Ryan Day kick the field goal because 7 points is massive because this offense can't score a touchdown, right? So like,
well, that's the thing. That's the other thing though. Like, do you really think they're going to drive 99 yards on you?
Right. And no,
no. And like, because you know they can't.
I get that, right? So Day goes for the kill shot, doesn't happen. But then you look at it and you're like, Penn State gets the ball back and they're at the 48, right? They're at their own 48. And it's just like, they couldn't do anything. I mean, it just felt like whenever they got the midfield, it was like, well, brace yourself because they're going to be punting soon. But I mean, they just,
well, that's what, like,
it was crazy.
Let's take a quick break from the podcast here to talk to you about our sponsor. That is the Voodoo Brewing Company in State College, the State College Pub, of course, located at 201 Elmwood Street. Audrey and I, at this point, I think, are considered frequenters of Voodoo. One of our favorite places to go, football season, out of football season. You really, really can't beat it.
Yeah, awesome view, awesome setup. The Metmosa, that is my go-to at Voodoo Brewery. If you haven't gone there, try it. It's exactly what you think. It's not a mimosa. It's a Metmosa, beer, orange juice. It's really good.
That's right.
I love the setup there. To me, it's like a nice place to gather with some friends, hang out. And it's really nice all time of year, John, because like you get the summer, great spot, spring. We don't get many sunny days in State College. So when we have those, you got to enjoy them. But with the fall, the weather getting bad, Voodoo will have fire pits soon. So you'll be able to enjoy the outside a little bit longer. But check out our friends over at Voodoo Brewery.
Yeah, and you know, they have a new Voodoo kitchen there serving food as well. Tuesday nights at 6 p.m., they have their pub trivia. Thursday nights at 6 p.m., they have their bingo, of which Audrey and I have been to as well. Unsuccessful.
Never won, but we've been several times. Never won.
Frankly, that's on us, poor bingo players. But no, just a wonderful place to go, a wonderful place to have a beer. Again, that is Voodoo Brewing Company, State College Pub, located at 201 Elmwood Street.
back to the pod.
I like what I was saying earlier. I like trying to create a big play in that situation. Mm-hmm. If I'm trying to create a big play in that situation, I would like my five-star quarterback to throw the football. Mm-hmm. Why? Like, Keandre Lambert-Smith may be an excellent passer, right? Like, he may be an excellent gadget play.
Did it in high school, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, he did it in high school. Let your quarterback throw the ball. Send multiple guys deep and let him try and hit one of them. It was so unnecessarily, quote unquote, creative here, right? Like, there was no need to do that. The goal,
too cute.
Yeah, right. The goal in that situation is to create a big play. It is not to create a big play in the most weird way possible, right? The second one, the third trick play, the second Keandre Lambert-Smith attempted pass was absolutely. I mean, the game was pretty much over. They were always unlikely to recover the onside kick. By the way, going for two there is the right decision. Just to outline the thinking behind it, it's an analytics play. I agree with it. Like, the idea is you're down 14. If you go for two and get it, a touchdown wins you the game. If you don't get it, you can still go for two again and just tie the game. So essentially, you have two shots at going for two. If you get it on the first one, then you have a chance to win. If you get it on the second one, then you're still right where you were at the extra point. Do we think Penn State's best two-point play is Keandre Lambert-Smith trying to throw a pass? Because if so, then, like,
help not.
Major problems. How, like, maybe the idea there is, like, oh, call something we've already called. We don't want to blow a two-point play in a game that we're probably going to lose. Like, maybe that's what they're thinking. Otherwise,
I don't know what they were thinking.
There were a lot of, to be blunt, dumb play calls. That was the dumbest one of the night, or of the afternoon. Sorry, these games are being at noon are still.
The night is young, yeah.
A new thing. But it was the dumbest play call of the night. I couldn't believe that they did it. It was, I tweeted something like, that in one of the biggest moments of the game, they had their wide receiver throw a pass, like, for the second time. Just genuinely could not believe that it happened.
Your offense has enough problems as it is, right?
You're creating extra problems.
Yes, like, why are we adding more layers of complexity to this, right? Like,
yeah, but hear me out, Audrey. Okay, so no one can get open. No one can get open, right? One guy is pretty good at getting open. How about instead of giving him a chance to get open, let's have him throw it?
You know what? I was so close, John, a couple times. At the Ohio State press box, you have the visiting coaching box is down the hall from us. A couple times I was tempted to just go down there and be like, what's going on the other side of the wall, the other side of the door, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe they're all too hopped up on Red Bull. I don't know. But, like, there's so many ways you can slice and dice this game. And everything I keep coming back to is, like, you had all the opportunities and your offense couldn't do anything. And to me, that's a, yes, your receiving core has massive issues. We knew this was a problem. It's going to be a problem. And you know what, John, like, playing inferior opponents, it masks these issues, right? But they're still there. I was thinking back the Northwestern game, right? Early on in that game, we saw the problems with the offense, but it's like, oh, you know, it's the 11 a.m. start. It's Northwestern. They're on the road, but they got it together. They blew them out. Like, I was fooled by it. I picked them to win. I was completely wrong. But also, like, I did not think they would struggle this much. And, like, the running backs, I mean, it was very much a two-series rotation, right? Like, to me, this feels like we're trying to get both guys involved. We want to get both guys happy. And, Nick Singleton, you have rip off a few good runs. You look good. And then, go over there on the sideline for a while because it's Katron's turn.
Well, and, like, then it leads to a situation where, like, they run that swing pass. I actually think it might have been just before the punt, so it ended up working out for them.
Which punt, John? There were like 100 of them. Which one?
Well, the one that hit Lorenzo Styles.
The game-changing punt.
Yeah, the game-changing punt. Mm-hmm. But I believe they threw a swing pass to Singleton on that, and it's like, because you're rotating guys, you don't have your best receiving back out there. Like, Katron Allen should be out there in that situation. He's a better receiving back. Nick Singleton's really good. In every pass-catching, pass-blocking situation, Katron Allen should be out there. He's just better at it. Stone Cold better at it at this point, and there's no way around it. So, like, doing that kind of rotation leads to stuff like that happening, where in the biggest game of the James Franklin era, you don't have your best options out on the field because you're rotating guys. And I just don't get it. And I hate that we're, like,
not even talking about the defense because they are that good, but like, it really is this bad offensively that you have to wonder what is going to change for this to get better. Because Drew Aller is and deserves to be the quarterback this year and next year. He is, I'm still like uber confident in him as a passer. Frankly, as a runner too, like you said, like, there were a couple times I thought he should have taken off when he would have had an opportunity to. I'm still confident in the offensive line being good. I'm not confident in the receivers, but that's not going to change. They definitely have to hit the portal this offseason. Like, that has to be priority one, two, and three, is getting receiving help. The running backs are really good. It's like this just kind of falls to the guy in charge of all of this, right? The guy calling plays in this situation, that's Mike Yurcich. And I don't know how – and by the way, if you're a Penn State fan listening to this and you're pissed off right now, I think you have every right to be. Like, they had every opportunity to win a game that you and I both said going in that they're better than Ohio State, right? Genuinely still believe that to be true. Like, from a you know, position-by-position perspective, I think they're better. The difference is, you mentioned Marvin Harrison Jr. I think Cade Stover is a little bit into that category too. They have two guys that can go out and win you a game on offense. Yep. Penn State's got a bunch of those dudes on defense. Across the board, they've got those dudes on defense. They don't have a single one at a skill position other than theoretically Aller, and he's not there yet.
They it doesn't matter if he doesn't matter to throw right to, now. Right? Like,
right. Like, he can be as good as he wants. If guys aren't getting open, if guys aren't catching passes, it doesn't matter. None of it matters. And again, I'm not absolving him in this situation. He was not good. This was easily the worst game of his career. He was inaccurate early. I thought he played a little skittish late, but the early stuff is definitely on him. I don't know that I can put the late stuff on him because he was kind of set up to fail.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and you hit on Cade Stover, and James Franklin was very complimentary of him throughout the week. And
well, he had that one catch up the seam that I was like, it was over Kobe King, and Kobe King, like, he was there.
He was right there.
If he was a little bit taller or a little bit longer arms, he'd have tipped it. And I was like, oh my God. I couldn't believe Stover got it.
I mean, Stover, remarkable. And I think Penn State has some big time players at tight end, and we're just not seeing it. And it's like, you have the big play to Theo Johnson, and then you just kind of forget about it. Right. And like, to me, the moment when I was like, this thing is absolutely dead, cooked, like, I'm sending in the story now type of deal, was after the fumble recovery, right? Ball hits off the Ohio State player. Penn State recovers it. Tyler Wells did massive momentum swing. And I said, all right, you just got to move the ball a little bit, right? Like, you got a half a field to work with. And then Penn State ends up punting the ball from the exact same spot where they took over, right? Because you had a sack in there, and you're faced with third and 15. And I'm like, third and 15 at this point for an offense that hadn't converted a third down all day, like, might as well been like third and a mile. I mean, it was that bad. And I believe they went to one of the tight ends. It might have been Theo Johnson, got to maybe 5 yards. And then you punt again. I mean, like, when Penn State went into the transfer portal this offseason looking for difference makers, little did they know, John, when it came time for the Ohio State game, they're going to be relying on Riley Thompson left and right. Forget about the receivers. Forget about anybody else. You had to go and get a punter, and this was your showcase for your punter. Like, what a mess. And I think too, right? Like,
I'm curious, by the way, before we probably have to talk about the receiver specifically a little more. I know you have the game notes in front of you. Don't look at them. Do you know how many targets Keandre Lambert-Smith had?
No, he had a few pass attempts. I would say probably like 6 or 7.
12. I do not remember half of them. So what I said, do you know how many Theo Johnson had or how many he's credited for?
Not enough. Probably like 4 or 5.
8. I don't remember it. Right? Like, these guys, because, and part of the reason you don't remember these things is because they weren't open or they weren't put in a position to succeed. They didn't have a real chance to make a play on the ball because they couldn't get separation, because they weren't schemed open, because they weren't given an advantage by the guy who's supposed to be in charge of giving them advantages across the field. 20 targets between those two, and they finished with 8 catches for 91 yards. Like, that's not good enough. And I'm not blaming them, to be clear. I don't think it's either of their fault. I don't, like I said, I don't think it's Aller's fault. I think it's just, you know, Aller's put in situations where he's tried to make tight window throws or windows that don't exist. And those guys are trying to make catches that aren't easy or aren't kind of available to them. And you know, they're kind of destined to fail. So yeah, I think you're right. I think they have the guys, they have talent to do that with. And I think the best coordinators in the country take the talent they have and they maximize it, right? Like, you know, I think if Marvin Harrison Jr. is on Penn State, that they win this game. But I wonder if he's used as effectively, right? And I think that's part of the problem.
Well, here's the flip side of that, John. If you're Drew Aller and you're suiting up for Ohio State, how good are the Buckeyes then, right? Like, I think they
blow him out of the water.
I think he's the more gifted quarterback, right? And that's like a crazy what if, right? And then one of the other things that also came up during the game, if Julian Fleming was suiting up for Penn State, he definitely would have been their number one receiver. So you have, again, the recruiting trail, the 365-day-a-year race here. But the bottom line is Penn State isn't good enough. And the fact of the matter is, 5 years after James Franklin's great, not yet elite comment, the results haven't changed, right? And to me, this is where this program has to take a serious, long and hard look at everything, right? Like losses like this, Ohio State, Michigan, everything has to be under the microscope. Because well, quite
by the
frankly,
way, he admitted that it's not good enough earlier this week and like it kind of got glossed over. I don't remember if we talked about it on the pod.
Was it the identity comment? Is that what you're referring to?
No, he said that they have done a good job closing the gap on the top five teams in the country.
Oh,
and like kind of
refer
to themselves as like the top 10 program. Like that's an admission that you're behind still, which is really interesting.
But he did say it would be a one possession game, and it technically was at the end. Although
technically was by the end of
one position, you could have told me they were down by 50, and it would not have mattered at that point. Like it was so crazy in so many ways. And I think it's like, how do you rectify this moving forward? What do you do? Like you went out, this is what is Franklin's fifth OC. Yeah. I'm like, great. You beat Indiana. You should beat Indiana, right? Like Penn State has done a great job under James Franklin for the most part of beating the teams that they should beat. But you know what? That's not why you're paid $10 million a year, right? Like, this is not why we hear so much about facilities. This is not why we hear so much about, hey, if Ryan Day needs $13 million for NIL to keep his roster, we need the same or more, right? Like this, Jim Knowles took Mike Yurcich's lunch money and then some, right? Like this is
the way,
coordinator that you wanted.
He went up to him pregame. Knowles went up to Yurcich and gave him a hug and they were talking. You know, they coached together on the Oklahoma State coaching staff in 2018. They both should have been abundantly familiar with each other, but it sure seemed like the one guy was more familiar with the other, right? Like it seemed like Knowles had an advantage every step of the way. And listen, like to be clear, Ohio State's defense is one of the five best in the country. I genuinely think there's an argument that four of the five best defenses are in the Big Ten in Iowa, Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State. Like I think that is absolutely on the table. I haven't dove into the numbers. I'm not saying that definitively, but it is absolutely possible. This Ohio State defense is absolutely elite. Penn State did not have to come out and light it up for 35. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that's the benchmark here, right? Like, no one's saying that they should have been throwing the ball all over the yard. They should have been dominating from the start. They should have scored 35. They should have been able to score, I don't know, two touchdowns, right? Like, I don't think that's too much to ask when your defense is consistently giving you the ball back, like Ohio State's defense was doing for it. But its offense took advantage because it was good enough. Like, outside of Harrison, outside of Stover, of the healthy guys today, to be clear, because Igbeka Buka is fantastic. Yep. Same with Trevion Henderson is fantastic as well. Of the guys that played today, they were good enough, right? Like, it's Harrison, Stover,
and this was
and
a much
else.
More banged-up Ohio State roster than Penn State. Like, Penn State was – you had health in your favor as well, which is luck, right, for the most part. And, yes. Chop Robinson got hurt in this game, looked pretty significant.
Yeah, that was a scary that was injury. Scary. And
there was no James update Franklin, afterward. James Franklin was not asked about it. It was a pretty short news conference. I did ask Adiza Isaac about it, and he said he was able to talk the chop at halftime. But again, I mean, towel draped over the head, took a long time to get off the field. Certainly looked like he took a shot to the head. So we'll monitor that moving forward. But like, that's not why you lost this game, right? People want to complain about the holding penalty on Kalen King. That is not why you lost this game. This is all
the Yes, I and like here's the thing, like the two touchdowns that the defense gives up, right? It's It's one touchdown right after that massive swing, right, where it looks like that they're going to be up 10-3 because Curtis Jacobs makes a great play on the ball and forces a fumble and takes it all the way back, turns out this penalty, and comes back, and the defense, like, allows Ohio State to score after that, because there's another penalty on King after that who did not have his best game today. Like, I think that was abundantly clear. But they allow a touchdown there, which, fine, like, that's not a great result there, but it's one touchdown. The second touchdown was late in the game. It was maybe not decided, but kind of close to it at that point. And Marvin Harrison caught a crossing route. It just was more athletic than everybody else and faster and bigger and stronger.
Hit another gear.
Yeah, and just blew past everyone. I was down on the field for that, and he was coming toward the sideline where I was standing. It's just – it's one of those things you see him in person, like, man, he can fly. Like, he's incredible. But it was a play where it's like, you know, yes, they gave up a second touchdown. It's tough to fault a defense who's been on the field as much as they have and been dealing with him all game. He's going to get his. Like, it is – it's not like even a situation where you can say, like, oh, the best defensive coordinators can stop him. Like, the best defensive coordinators are hoping for, like, 8 for 110 or 8 for 90 yards and a touchdown for Marvin Harrison. Like, that's best case scenario. He could be a number one receiver on an NFL team right now, and he probably will be this time next year. The defense was, like, legitimately fantastic, across the board fantastic, outside of King struggling a little bit. But again,
Daquan Hardy, man, I think he had
Daquan
three
Hardy was awesome.
First quarter, right?
That's like another play, by the way, a special teams mistake by Daquan Hardy taking over the job full time this week, cost Penn State about 25 yards. Lets a punt go by, asked him about it after the game. I felt bad for him. Everyone seemed to be just stopping by asking about that and leaving because we were all curious about it, but, he got asked about it a bunch. Gave me the answer that essentially he thought he had tracked it well, and at the last second, like, he thought it took, like, a weird spin, and he kind of lost it, and that was that.
Yeah, it becomes a 72-yard punt because of the bounce, right?
And yeah, like what should have been Penn State getting the ball at the 50, which, by the way, as we found out after the punt that Tyler Elzin recovered, that was, I think, technically it's considered a muff. It's not a guarantee they would score. Because they might have messed that up, and the offense was so incompetent today that I don't know that getting the ball to 50 changes anything. This was bad. This was as bad of an outcome as you could reasonably expect, I think, for Penn State, because it sets the tone that not only are they not there right now, there's no discernible path to get there unless major changes are made.
Yeah, I think this offense, and again, this is all the offense. Like, you are, it feels like right now, and I think we might have, I feel like we talked about this at some point, whether it was on the podcast or maybe in our car rides together, John. I think at some point, one of us made the point where we're like, you know what? You don't want to piss away an opportunity with an elite defense because your offense isn't together. And that's what it felt like today was. You have this defense that can win you so many games, right? And, like, I'm not asking for a top five defense. I don't think top five offense. I don't think Penn State fans are asking for a top 10 offense, right? Like, you just needed an okay offense today, and you couldn't even get that. And I think, you know, you say, James, we've seen so many coordinators come through here, right? You got rid of Taylor Stubblefield in the offseason, right? Because presumably your wide receiver recruiting wasn't good enough, right? So you bring in Higgins, and now we're still talking about the wide receivers after your biggest game thus far. That's a problem. Like, I don't think you can look at everything that happened with this offense and say, like, yeah, it's just going to go away, right? It was fluky plays. Like, they didn't even turn the ball over. Like, that's the other crazy part. Like, you played turnover-free football, and it was still this bad as an offense.
Well,
like,
may as well have been turning it over with all the three and outs. Like, those may as well be turnovers.
I mean, no, and, like, you can't get into any rhythm, and, right, we always hear about that with play call. You want to get in the flow of the game, get in the rhythm, and, like, you're three and out, three and out, three and out. Like, you just can't do that. I come out of this game with so many more questions about the offense than I anticipated ever having coming into this. And then I add on to that, I say, well, is anything going to be any better against Michigan next month, right? Like, because, again, that's what you're graded on. Like, the 10-2, like, it's same old, same old. And, like, yes, so many teams would love to be 10-2 and, like, be proud of that. But again, like, this was about, like, this whole year and next year, it's supposed to be about being so much more than that, right? Like, you were built for this year. You were built for 2024. And now I don't know. Like, I just don't know what you can do with this offense. And the lights certainly look too bright for Mike Yurcich tonight. They looked too bright for Drew Aller. They looked too bright for many of these guys.
And what is endlessly frustrating to me, and this is, again, a journalist complaint.
Like, and there weren't even lights on because it was a noon game.
Right. The lights were not too bright for Drew, though, when he spoke afterward, because he was forced to be the one to take accountability for the offense. Him and Theo Johnson and Caden Saunders and, you know,
it's the same thing that happened after 4th and 5, where they bring out Trace McSorley. We don't hear from Ricky Ronnie till weeks later. Like,
yep. We don't know when we're going to talk to Mike Yurcich again. We don't know when he's going to be available.
Well, I can tell you, I can guarantee what the response is going to be. It's going to be, well, I'm here to talk about this specific game, because that's how it always goes. Right. And that's the thing that's so frustrating. As
there's a lack of accountability, quite frankly, from
and from fans have questions, right? We have questions too as reporters. We're working, we're trying to get you guys the answers. And that's what's so maddening, because, you know, James Franklin wants to be, and I get it, this is so many programs, they want to be that singular voice, like the head coach, the spokesman, they want to deliver the messaging. But there's so many questions. And the thing that I asked James Franklin after this was, back in the first quarter, Penn State had 3rd and 1, right? And I'm thinking 3rd and 1, run the ball. We see Aller attempt a pass to Keandre Lambert-Smith, incomplete. Penn State then takes a timeout. They come out of the timeout and decide to punt. So you just burn that time.
That, to me, like, this is, and James talks about, like,
out of that, because that was my question to James Franklin. Like, did Drew audible out of that while you threw the ball? No, James Franklin said the play call was a pass on 3rd and 1. So, like, this is supposed to be a great offensive line. This is supposed to be two of the best backs in the country. And that's, dude, like, you're not playing to your strengths. And, like, it's so baffling to watch.
This drove me nuts. And this, like, I get annoyed with this idea that, like, oh, people only complain. And, like, maybe some people will do this. I like to think I'm not one of them. James will always tell us, like, oh, if the result is bad, then it's a bad decision. If the result's good, everyone says it's a good decision. Mm-hmm. I try really hard not to think that way. And, like, that's why in those situations you'll see me, like, in a game, like, I'll tweet, like, oh, I like this decision to go for it before the result, right? Before you see what happens, because I want it to be known that I think this is good. Regardless of what happens here, I think they're making the right decision. And that's what I tweeted out when it got to 4th and 1, is like, I think this is the right decision here to go for it. I would have run it the play before, though. If you're on 3rd and 1, run it twice, 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, especially with a 6'5", 240-pound quarterback. Sneak it. Yeah. Sneak the ball. But, like, this is
– Tush push, you know, baby, gotta, right? Like,
yes.
This is where we first saw the T formation with Penn State a few years ago, too. And they did not throw it back to that today.
I thought it was the right decision to potentially go for it on that 4th and 1 for them to call a timeout and come out and play to lose, because that's what that is. Not going for it there is playing to lose.
Very passive.
You need to trust your offensive line. You need to trust your quarterback. You need to trust your running backs. How many times this game were they in, like, 3rd and 6? It felt like 100. I'm sure it was like 4, maybe 3. Were they in, like, 3rd and 6 and would run it with Nick Singleton and what looked like an attempt to, like, pick up half the yardage and then go for it and then just get stuffed on a 1 yard loss and then have to punt, right? Like, you need to, it's tough with the process and everything of making these decisions. Generally, like, if you're like 3rd and 6, I'm throwing the ball twice there, right? Giving yourself 2 shots at picking up 6 yards, because that, I don't know the numbers on this, but, like, to me, I think that's your best shot at getting a chunk play, essentially, which is what you're asking for there.
But also,
if you're
John,
in 3rd and 1, look or 3rd and 2, run it twice, right? But, like, give Theo Johnson a chance. Draw something up.
Yep.
Again, I go back to who's responsible for this. Draw something up. Have something designed there where you can trust that Theo Johnson is going to have a chance to operate in space, where Keandre Lambert-Smith can operate in space, where Dante Cephas can get open, where Harrison Wallace, the third, can get open. Like, give these guys an opportunity to do something. Put them in a position to succeed, unlike what we saw all night. I don't know. It's kind of hard to believe that this went as horrendously as it did. And, like, like I said, it's genuinely, like, not something I expected. Maybe I don't know. I feel a little bit dumb, because I didn't think that they were suddenly going to unveil a whole new offense for Ohio State, but maybe you know, deep down, like I was thinking, like, oh yeah, they have to, like, this will be better. Like, there's no way their offense is this hyper conservative or this like disjointed. And like, I feel dumb, right? Like, our job is to give that analysis and like had the wool pulled over our eyes too, I guess, because they just are that bad.
And I think the other thing too is like, and I had to laugh about this after the game because somebody said this, I think maybe before or while we were going to interview, something like that. They're like, well, I guess we can just figure out that like Penn State was not holding back the explosive element of this offense.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's pretty clear. Like it is not there. And you knew it wasn't there. And I think it was a very telling comment at the time. Hindsight, extremely telling when we heard from Mike Yurcich during the bye week about the receivers and Drew being on the same page. And he said that it's not there yet, but they need to remedy it fast. Yeah, it's not. And will anything go better against Michigan, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, because it's tough to figure coming off of this. And yes, you reserve the right to get better. Every team does. But you also have to make sure something like this doesn't snowball. And one of the things that players after the game said, and I think some of this is probably just kind of status quo to some regard, but Theo Johnson said, he's like, yeah, the offensive players after this one, we weren't really talking to the defense. Because, like, again, what are you going to say, right? Like, I think that's the other side. And I was asking players, yeah, like, my thing was, what did Mike Yurcich say to you guys? Because he's not talking to us, so what did he say? And they said that, you know, Mike said, hey, like, there have been a lot of good teams that have been 11-1 and have done really good things. And like, let's hold each other accountable and this and that. There's going to have to be. And again, we heard so much about leadership this offseason. Well, that's where this is going to get tested this week. And Theo Johnson, yep, absolutely is one of those guys, the leader. We always see him breaking down the team pregame. That's going to come into focus this week. And how do you kind of keep this thing on track? Because it's easy to point fingers after this one. And I think it's really easy to do if you're a defensive player after this to say, like, offense, like, what was that? Right. Cause I think that's the natural reaction.
To some guys' credit post game, Curtis Jacobs, the guys I talked to be clear, when I say some guys, I'm not insinuating that others were casting blame. Curtis Jacobs said, well, we didn't do well enough because we didn't hold them to fewer points than them, right? Like they didn't do good enough job as a defense. Adisa Isaac said, you know, we tried to quote from him, try to do our best to have the offense and special teams back. Obviously it's a team game. You can't do it alone. We feel like we played a hard game against a great opponent. We didn't do enough on defense, right? Like this is those guys taking accountability to their credit. But to me, they're taking accountability for the failures of the offense. And that's not necessary. Yeah. And I don't think it's something that they should feel obligated to do. I don't know. Like the idea, I think, was broached post game two with Drew that, like, you know, was there a need for him to step up as a leader? I don't think that has nothing to do with this. Right. Like, I think this team has plenty of leaders. Like you said, it's on them to step up now. But I do think
performance has to be better. Like that's the.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with. Yeah, it has nothing to do with any of that. I think maybe the idea of like coalescing, and I get what you're saying, like don't let one turn into two or what have you. Mm-hmm. They play Indiana next week. Indiana is really bad. And for as disjointed as it may feel, Penn State fans, it can always be worse. Things are really bad with the Hoosiers right now. I do not expect that team. They may not win another game the rest of the year. Certainly not next week. But yeah, this was, I don't know. I think for Penn State fans, probably a nightmare scenario, right? Because it's not like you can leave this game feeling like optimistic, like, oh, it was they're right there. Like they, you know, they, if just this had gone this way or what have you, they were outclassed on one side of the ball, like had no business being on the same field as Ohio State.
And I'm thinking just off the top of my head, John, like the Ohio State losses under James Franklin, and like, where do you even slot this one in at, right? Because you have the 2 1-point losses in 17 and 18. You have the 14 game in double overtime. You have one win in 2016. Like, to me, this felt like more of a step back because Ohio State is not that world power. And like, we'll see where they are in the AP poll. But like, for anyone watching this kind of from like a national perspective, I think you're watching both of these teams and being like, whew, this is not, you know, yeah, two great defenses, but these offenses are a work in progress, to put it nicely, I think. And
yeah, the thing is, for Ohio State, they have guys that can carry it still, though. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. They can be good enough offensively against any team.
And if you just end up looking at this on paper, right, you're going to say, oh, Penn State lost 20-12. Like, oh, it can't be that bad. No, you dig into the numbers. It was that bad, right? Like, I think we'll probably hear that. Yeah, I mean, it just felt like, because the offense was so bad, like, God, this is going to sound pretty mean, John, but I guess this is kind of what it's like to watch Iowa every week.
Listen, I made the joke to you that I was going to compare this offense to a Ferentz offense, which I have ripped before, because Brian Ferentz obviously has that job because he's Kirk Ferentz's son, and presumably will lose it at the end of the year because he does not meet the very, very easy goal, and not easy from like a me and you standpoint, easy goal in the world of college football as a Big Ten team, of scoring 25 points per game when counting your defense's touchdown, which they score a lot of. You know, that is the worst offense in college football, the Iowa offense. And honestly, it felt a little bit like this game was taking place in Iowa City, right? Like, it did not feel like a Penn State offense. It felt like an aimless offense, the kind that I'm sure, unfortunately for Hawkeyes fans, that they've gotten used to watching. And I'm sure had they tuned in to Big Noon Kickoff that they may have gotten confused and thought they were watching their own team.
Yeah, I just pulled up the number in front of me from ESPN Stats and Info. Penn State 1-16 on third downs, 6.3%. With a minimum of 15 third down attempts, that's the worst third down conversion percentage by any AP-ranked team in a game over the last 10 seasons. So again, like, this wasn't just like, oh, they look bad. Like, this was historically, epically bad on third down, your money down. And yeah, I don't even begin to know when you watch the film from this one, right? If you're Mike Yurcich, if you're this offense, like, I'm sure as we record this Saturday night, they're already back in State College and probably diving into this one. You know, we'll hear, make the correction Sunday, flush it, move on. But like, there's a lot of flushing.
Like, I asked James post game, right? Like, how would you evaluate the offensive play calling this game? And he said it was a one score game. He thought they should run more, which I agree with. Like, again, I'm not, you know, over here waving the run the ball banner or anything like that, but I thought today they definitely could have used a few more rushes. But he also said they'll evaluate it on Sunday. And so on Tuesday, I'm sure, if not me, someone will ask, what was the evaluation of the offensive play calling? Where is it at? Where do they need to improve?
And we've moved on to Indiana week.
Yeah. No, I hope we get an answer. Yeah. I was going to say, I hope we get an answer to that, because like, I think fans deserve
I think we
to
will,
an answer.
Because it's a big enough moment. I think we will. Because again, there's just so many questions. And I think can we point to some positives today, John? What do we have any positives from the entire game? Man, I mean, yeah, the defense is
so good.
Yeah. I mean, and you know what, like, you see,
by the way, this is the
down,
thing. I don't
scary
not to,
moment.
Yeah, not no, to
but,
what
but they
if,
didn't the miss a beat. Like, that's yeah. the thing. They didn't miss a beat.
But not to what if the whole thing about the play with Curtis Jacobs, the strip sack and return.
Don't do it, know. John. Don't
do know.
It. I've
I don't
seen
know if you
enough of
this
on Twitter.
I don't know if you noticed this. No, on that play, Curtis wasn't the first Penn State player to get to Kyle McCord. Deny gets there, beats his guy, and goes with the rip move to try to rip the ball out of Kyle McCord. And McCord doesn't have his arm back to throw or anything, so he kind of whiffs on it. McCord steps up into Jacobs. But if Dennis Sutton obviously gets his like hand on the ball there, it's out before the holding call happens, definitively before the holding call happens. And then suddenly you're in the what if of like, do they recover? Does Ohio State still score? Like, are they rattled because they fumbled even if they recover? So to me, like, that's, and by the way, that I'm not like saying I did something wrong. He did the absolute right thing. He just got a little unlucky. I thought he was fantastic. I thought Daquan Hardy outside of the punt issue was fantastic. I thought Johnny Dixon was absurd. Yeah, like, he was
really good.
Marvin Harrison really actually had a hard time with Johnny Dixon when they were in man coverage on occasion. Now, again, Marvin's going to win his because he's the best player in college football, but. I thought the safeties were fantastic. To point out one play specifically that like evoked a real reaction from me in the press box, when that we talk about the goal line stand that Penn State made. Yes. So in the fourth and goal situation, Ohio State rushes up to the line, clearly gets the look they want. They're trips to the right. They have essentially they run a swing route that's actually a screen essentially because Kalen King was a little late getting out because he thought he was going to be lined up on the other side of the scrimmage. McCord gets rid of the ball quickly, throws it. Zaki Wheatley and Jalen Reed absolutely blew that play up. It never had a chance. And like, I made a noise in the press box because they made that play so quickly on a play that Ohio State had a definitive advantage. They got the exact look that they wanted to get to beat Penn State. And those two were so good and saw that play coming so well, they blew it up for a loss and got the team, got the offense the ball back. We don't have to talk about, we've already spent, 50 plus minutes talking about what happened next. But like that play in and of itself, like that's what this defense is, right? It's so swarming. Yeah. It's always around the ball. It's always attacking. It's always putting you on the back foot. Penn State's defense dictates the terms of action, right? Like they dictate the flow of the game and how it's going to go. They do such a good job of it. And it's honestly a shame that they didn't get paid off for it today because the defense deserved to win.
Also, John, I think Brian Day, throw the ball in the end zone there, right? Like, I think that's what I would have done. The other thing,
don't knee it like with three timeouts.
This
like,
is where I'm going, John. Yes, this is why it's so haunting for Penn State because of all the flaws, all the warts that we've rolled out here for the past 55 minutes. You then have the reality of I'm sitting there before the half, and I'm saying, man, this is going to be a big momentum swing because Ohio State gets the ball to start the third quarter, 42 seconds left, three timeouts. They get the ball, and they decided to knee it out. And I'm like, Ryan Day, what are you doing? And I guess his reasoning afterward, I was talking to my colleague at The Athletic about it, and Cam said that, like, Ryan Day was, like, afraid they were going to turn the ball over, which, again, not the biggest confidence play for Kyle McCord when you're doing that. And he thought like, hey, we're going to get the ball back to start the third quarter. It's going to be okay. So you have that moment. Then you also have going for it, passing up, you know, the field goal. You have that scenario. Like they let Penn State hang around. It felt like Ohio State was kind of playing with their food the whole time. Right. And Penn State had the opportunities, but just couldn't capitalize. But yeah, for me, a few of those Ryan Day decisions, you think you're like, man, like why is he doing this? But ultimately like it works out. That crowd at the end of the game then starts mocking Penn State with some flavorful language. And we saw that. I mean, even pregame,
some weird like field storming too. Like I don't like this happened 2 years ago too. Like there was a full field storming 2 years ago. Some fans like stormed the field. Like, what are you doing? Like,
there were a handful by five and a half points.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird. There were like a handful of Ohio State fans that made it onto the field afterward, and like security is quickly getting them off. Yes. Bizarre, but like again, I mean, I think when you're trying to slot this loss in the James Franklin Ohio State losses, because we've got 9 of them to rank now, it's like, to me, this is one of those ones that you say it has to hurt more for Penn State, for Penn State fans, because you had the chances, but you just couldn't get it done. And I think that is what's going to haunt Penn State when they look back at this one. I think that's what's going to haunt this program when you look ahead a little bit, right? Like, this isn't just one of those losses where you say, yeah, you played poorly. Like, that happens. Forget about it. Like, it was just so lopsided on one side of the ball. After the game, I was on the field kind of following Olu Fashanu, and then Manny Diaz was right there. So you're watching him, and he just looked stunned. I mean, to me, it was like Manny just kind of kept making sure the defensive players got off the field, that nothing happened, because there's obviously some chippiness there, you know, an edge with both of these teams. Just looked absolutely stunned after this.
So here's the thing. To end this on a bit of a positive note for Penn State fans, This was bad. There's no way around it. If some way, somehow, Penn State beats Michigan, We're right back to where we were a week ago. And this is a
three-way tiebreaker. You now need to root for Iowa.
Do you want to – well, if Iowa, who lost today.
Is this supposed to be a positive spin?
Well, no, here's the actual positive spin. It can always be worse. Because North Carolina, who's undefeated, just lost to Virginia 10 seconds ago. North Carolina to a dreadful Virginia team. Florida State is currently down 3 to Duke. Duke is driving on Florida State in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. Like now, by the time you listen to this, you know the result of that game. And if Florida State loses that game, suddenly 3 unbeaten teams have lost today. And those ranks of the unbeaten slowly dwindle. And I am not saying this. Right. I do not. This is not my voice saying this. People will be able to say,
I want names, John. Who are the people? I need names.
You know, this will be a narrative that you hear, right? Like, if they, if teams continue to fall, and let's say Penn State, there's like two undefeated teams at the end of the regular season, Georgia and someone else, what have you. People will be able to say that Penn State has, or let's say it's Georgia and Ohio State, be able to say that Penn State has the best loss of any of those teams.
You think Ohio State?
That conversation. So I've never been as big of a believer in J.J. McCarthy as others have. Now, Michigan's just absolutely steamrolling at Michigan State. That's in, like,
disarray
dismay
and
right
them,
now.
Yeah,
it's really bad. But I don't know. I do know that, once again, though, they will have the best players, the best offensive players on the field. Like, Marvin Harrison Jr. is better than Blake Corum. I think Kate Stover's, other than Brock Bowers, the best tight end in the country. Bowers obviously not healthy at Georgia right now. I don't know that Michigan has the offensive firepower to blow them out, and Ohio State's defense is good enough to – like, I don't know that Kyle McCord's much worse than J.J. McCarthy. I'm sure there will be plenty of people that vehemently disagree with me, namely those who are Michigan fans. I understand. That's fair. I fully get that. I don't believe McCarthy's that much better than McCord, and I do believe that McCord, as we saw today, has the best weapon, Marvin Harrison Jr., and he will have the best player on the field with him. So – fully in rivalry game, it's the game, right? Like, absolutely possible that Ohio State wins that. Or that, you know, and frankly, if Michigan wins it, then and Penn State beats Michigan, there's a whole other scenario there. But like, there is a world still where Penn State makes the college football playoff. Today should not give you confidence that it can happen, right? That like, suddenly Penn State is going to magically get better offensively. But with changes, potentially drastic ones, they can get better. So like, the season is not over. You know what's going to happen, right? Everyone's downtrodden now. If they beat Michigan in 3 weeks, you'll be able to pull up this episode and be like, think about how downtrodden you were then and how elated you would be after a Michigan win, right? Like, I don't think it's impossible for Penn State to beat Michigan. I don't think it's going to happen. I would be shocked if I don't pick Michigan to win that game, despite it being Beaver Stadium.
They reserve the right to get better, John. That's the thing, right? Like,
yes, right. Like, this is, we see it all the time in college sports, especially. These are kids at the end of the day, in large part. And, you know, ability can improve. It can dissipate quickly based on, like, you know, how the flow of a game is going. So, it's fully possible for in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, suddenly they're like one of a bundle of one loss teams, and they have the best loss in the country because Ohio State's that good. They're not going to overlook Indiana. They're going to do the 1-0 with Indiana. They're going to do it with Maryland. They'll probably win both those games. And then it's still all out there. I just don't think this is the outcome to give you confidence, but it still exists. Like, all of it still exists. All of it is still in front of Penn State, as much as it may not feel like it is, as much as it may have not have sounded like it is based on listening to us talk for the last hour.
I was going to say, yeah, this is a very depressing episode.
Yeah, but I don't like that. It's the heat of the moment, right? It's what it feels like right now. It's what we just watched. But at the end of the day, it's all there if they can fix it. They have to fix it. That's a massive thing.
And fix it fast.
Absolutely, right, and fix it fast. They've got 2 games to workshop whatever they need to workshop and be in that position by the time they face Michigan. But it's fixable, and it's there. And like I said, North Carolina losing to Virginia, not on my bingo card for today. Not a thing that I would have thought was feasible. And again, by the way, Duke continues to drive down the field on Florida State. Like, college football's weird. Washington plays Arizona State later tonight. I'm sure – you know, that has a chance to get frisky. Like, it's just, it's a weird sport. Things can happen. The season is not over. But I think, you know, Penn State is in need of some drastic changes before they try and move forward. But yeah, I think that is as good of a place as any to leave it. I apologize. Hopefully this was therapeutic for Penn State fans. No. Yeah, you know, and have that, you know, have this to listen to and to watch and kind of work through it. And, you know, to that light at the end of the tunnel, try to give you that too, while understanding that it may feel dire right now.
By the time you're listening to this on Sunday, it means that the sun has come up.
That's
and
right.
That it's another day, right? So there's
a lot
that.
Of it may be gloomy tomorrow. I'm not entirely
sure.
True.
Yeah, we haven't really seen the sun much
really
today.
Yeah, it's been very gloomy.
As always, please rate, review, subscribe the Nittany Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. John and I will be back midweek, and it's going to be a busy week again because
we'll have some answers, hopefully.
Hopefully we come bearing answers. If not, I'm sure we'll have plenty more questions. Because that's
we will just continue asking our questions to you.
How this goes. Yeah, we will pose our questions to you. But thank you for listening to us. If you enjoy it, we hope you do. We'll be back all season. But tell a Penn State friend, fan, this is the Nittany Dispatch with Audrey Snyder and John Sauber. And we'll see you midweek.